Welcome to Licking on Leadership.
The purpose of this program is to bring to you interviews with industry leaders.
A weekly podcast bringing you leaders of the real estate and mortgage industry.
And I can't think of anyone better to join me in this role of providing this co-hosting role than one of the top leaders in our industry, and that's Mark Jones of AmeriFirst Mortgage Banking Group.
And here's the host of Licking on Leadership, David Licking and Mark Jones.
Folks, welcome to the podcast, Licking on Leadership. I'm joined again by my co-host, Mark Jones. Mark, good to have you here, friend.
Dave, thanks so much. It's always good to be with you. And I'm telling you what, I'm so excited with our guest today, Jan Wetz. She's been in our industry for a long, long time. She's been a fixture in the QC and training circle. So I'm very excited to have her.
She's someone that broke through what, yeah, I would say the glass ceiling or beyond. I mean, she started a business years ago, Wetzel Trott, and it was the leading QC firm and provided services to the industry. So I guess without further ado, let's bring Jan on. Jan Wetzel, welcome to Licking on Leadership.
Before we get to the interview, we'll have just a quick word from the sponsor that makes this podcast possible. Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA declared disaster areas. An estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblacknight@bkfs.com.
Jan Wetzel, welcome to Licking on Leadership.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave and Mark. It's good to talk to you guys.
Well, it's good to have you here, and we only wish we were there because you and Mark, we're doing this over the phone, and you're in Florida where you're now retired. That is after a successful career, and I just learned that Mark's down there not too far from you. So if you live in Michigan at this time of the year, it makes a lot of sense you want to get away and get down to warm Florida. It's a beautiful spot.
Oh, absolutely. There's only like an 80-degree difference in temperature, so yes, you're absolutely.
You know, Jan, a lot of people may not know you. You've been retired now for how long?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years. So you're new into this, and I've got to tell you, I'm pretty impressed how you've adjusted to it. You're enjoying retirement, but let's go back to the beginning. I know this might go right up against a question that's inappropriate, but how long were you in the mortgage industry anyway?
Dave, you know you don't ask women how old they are. You don't ask women that question either, because we don't like to admit how old we are.
Yeah, just generally speaking. But you started in the industry long, long time ago. We'll just put it a long, long time ago.
I started in 1982.
Tell us about your beginning. Tell us about some of the earliest days of your career. How you started and how you got going.
Sure. I got out of college. I needed a job. I got a job as a secretary at a mortgage insurance company. The name of the company at the time was Tycor, one of the top five. And they promoted me to an underwriter, which was really my basis in the mortgage industry. And then I went on to become the vice president of Tycor for the Midwest region. And as we all know, Tycor went out of business, and I think it's because lack of quality control. So I said, okay, why not? Let's do a quality control company. Lenders are supposed to do it, and then they weren't. So I went to Fannie Mae and said, hey, guys, I'm thinking of this. And they looked at me like I had worms coming out of my ears. But I just thought it was a good idea, so I started the company.
And I know from personal experience, because we've used Jan's company in the past for both quality control on the origination side and on the servicing side of our business, that the client list that she had during those years was very deep and full of names that you'd really recognize. She really set the standard for how quality control should be done, and became a great outsource for it. So we were really excited to join with Jan, and I'm really glad to be talking with her again. Jan, take us from when you started your company, and then how you grew it. I know you at one more point in time had gotten into the training side of the business, and then into the default and foreclosure side of the business. So take us from starting it to where you were when you got to full stride.
Sure. I started it with, and I owned a cat and a Mustang, and I had $700 in the bank. I was 29 years old, but I believed in what I was doing. I believed in the cause. And I came back to Michigan. I was living in Chicago at the time. I came back to Michigan and went to a customer of mine that I had known through the mortgage insurance business. His name was Hugh Ross, quite a pioneer himself. And I said, I'm starting this business. And he was an attorney. He said, okay, I'm signing sight unseen, do it. And from there it grew. And after 30 years of growing the business, I ended up with about 600 clients across the country. I think we hit we only hit 47 states.
Only. That's good.
In the country with clients ranging from mortgage bankers, mortgage brokers, banks, you name it, anybody that lended, we pretty much had a customer. And then we grew it to the servicing business. And I did that for 30 years. We went from one employee in 1984 to 125 when I sold the business.
Wow.
3 years ago, about 2.5 years ago. It was quite a business, and I loved every minute of it.
Jan, through that journey, I'm sure you had some wonderful celebrations and you had some disappointments. I think we learn more from those areas where we struggle. There was challenges at different seasons and through your journey. Share one of those stories or a couple of stories with our listeners, if you wouldn't mind.
I'll share a couple, actually, Dave. I think some of the things that people have to realize if they're going to jump off that cliff and start their own business in any regard or be in any leadership role, they have to be willing to sacrifice a lot and understand themselves to be able to do that. Because, I mean, there was a couple of years during those times that I went without money. I didn't take a paycheck. I paid my employees first, and I didn't take a paycheck. So that was challenging. And again, being a woman in the business world 30 years ago is much different than it is today. And I faced challenges of, you know, I guess today, and by today's standard, you might call it sexual harassment. I didn't call it that. I think it was just the way the world was.
Yeah.
And it's all the way that I think I handled the situation. You know, I'll give you a funny example. I was in a business meeting, and the guy, a potential client, the whole time was staring at my chest. And I had to look at him, knowing that this was going to be a big account. But I looked at him and said, you know, my eyes are up here, not down there. And he kind of got embarrassed, and he signed the contract. So,
well, that's a heck of a close. That's a heck of a close. You know what? I used to work for a guy that is now a long time retired, also lives in Florida. And he just had this bad habit of his eyes went there. And I would challenge him on that. I said, that's offensive. Why? What are you doing? And he did not realize it. And so, I mean, and so he says, anytime you see me doing that, please bring it to my attention. We snapped him of that, but there, I mean, sometimes it is sexual harassment or there are inappropriate looks. And then sometimes it's people just not being aware of it. And I think one of the things impressed me, Jan, is how you handled those situations. You didn't go to the, I'm so offended, I'm, you know, sue or whatever. I mean, you just handled it as a true professional. And I think that's such an important part of working in this world today is how to do that. And that's a wonderful leadership story that you can have. So, you know, what would be your advice in this world where there's so much a focus on this? How would be to the mortgage professional, how would you recommend they handle it? And then toss it over to Mark.
I think you do that with confidence. And I think that confidence comes with passion and your integrity. And I think that if you're confident enough in your cause and yourself, you can handle any situation, regardless if it's you think it's sexual in nature or just a business setting. If you're compromised in a business situation where somebody wants you to do something that isn't right, you just have to be able to say no and willing to risk losing that client over
right.
it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what people fail to do. I think they give in to their integrity, and that's not really going to get you far.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And you know, and it, you know, and listen to what you said. It's and I know how we are today, and how we treat our team, and it's so disappointing to hear that women have to go through that at all. It shouldn't be about that. It should just be about what's between their ears, and that's really what it's about in business. So, but anyway, I wanted to move on to a different subject, Jan. I know at a certain point in time you decided to kind of expand your offering. You'd already mentioned from origination to servicing, but I know at a certain point you and I believe it was Dave Trott, who specialized in foreclosure, merged your companies together. And I wondered if you could share with us what was the reasoning behind that and how that worked out for you.
Sure. David is a wonderful man and a great friend. He's a congressman, as you well know now. He owned one of the largest foreclosure firms in the country. And I've known David for years. I had had my business. It was Wetzel and Associates when they started it. There was no associates. It was just my employees. And David approached me like 7 years ago and said, "Hey, Jan, I'm really interested in expanding my horizons. How about if I give you the capital input?" Well, who doesn't say no to capital input?
Yeah.
Trust the person that you're going
in
with. And he did do that, and he lent his name, and we changed the company name to Wetzel Trott. So Dave was my partner really for about 5 full years. And then I sold the company like 2.5, 3 years ago now. But yeah, Dave was a great, great benefit to me. Never got involved, never, ever got involved with the day-to-day operations. Just let me run it, and I reported into him once a quarter, and we had dinner, so it was a great partnership, and I miss him dearly.
That's neat.
Oh, he's a great man. I like Dave a lot.
Let's get into the topic of leadership, Jan. You have been a powerful leader in your marketplace, in the industry, and I would like to have you define for our audience what leadership is to you. What does it mean to you? What is leadership, that topic?
Well, I think leadership to me was believing in what you're doing and setting an example for people with compassion and honesty and perseverance. That's one of the biggest traits I think a leader can have in good times and in bad. And the other thing that I learned through the years is to learn from your mistakes. Everybody fails at some point in time. Maybe, you know, sometimes once a week, but you have to look at that failure and learn from it, and how can you correct it? And if it was your fault, make the appropriate apologies. Reward your employees, not just monetarily. We did all kinds of things, you know, just constant praise, being available. We did a lot of different fun things. You know, we do the hot dog lunch or whatever it took to make them feel appreciated. And I had employees that stayed with me for 29 years, 18 years, 20
wow.
years, 25 years. I had a lot of employees that were there well over 10 years with me because they appreciated that atmosphere. My door was always open. You have to be compassionate. And sometimes as a leader, that's hard to do when your brain is full of other things. But I think you have to be sensitive to the fact that the people that work for you are very, very important human beings, and just, you know, set by example.
That is so well said, Jan. Appreciate that. When you think beyond your own leadership and kind of look out in the world to other leaders that are out there who you've been exposed to, is there any particular leader or leaders that have inspired you?
There's been many. Particularly, I'll mention Hugh Ross again. He was a real pioneer in the mortgage business, and He was inspiring to me. But I think two issues. One is that you learn from everybody you meet. So I consider, in some regards, everybody somewhat of a leader to me. But the second thing is that I would recommend to anybody that's considering taking a lead position is a book called Grit, G-R-I-T. It is one of the most fabulous books I have ever read on leadership, and just the basic integrity piece, and she analyzes all different types of industries, right? And she's a brilliant, brilliant woman, and so that would be one of my recommendations. What about you, Mark?
Well, I was going to be my next question. I there are several authors and motivational speakers who have kind of inspired me along the way. top of the list is Zig Ziglar. I mean, when I was young in my career, just hearing him say, you can have anything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want. And all of his other sayings that I just loved. My two favorite authors, though, clearly Jim Collins, who's a good to great, and then Tom Peters, In Search of Excellence. Between those three, you know, I have found a lot of instructional motivation things that I've made a part of my leadership style. And I was curious if you already mentioned grit. Are there any others along those same lines that you found inspiration from?
You know, it's funny that you asked that. There was a long time ago, early in my career, probably maybe a year after I started my business, someone recommended to me that I take Dale Carnegie. And I thought that was just such a cliche kind of organization. But I learned so much from that class in terms of getting up, being confident, sharing things that you don't necessarily feel like you should share, but it really opens the door to so many things. And I agree with you on Zig Ziglar, Mark. I think he's fabulous.
Well, you look at Zig Ziglar, you look at some of these, you know, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich is one of my favorite ones, but it's a classic, been around forever, going way, way back. And then, you know, some more recent ones is Patrick Lencioni. The other one that really has inspired me is Simon Sinek. I love it really because it really gets to why.
That's David, right. One of his sayings, or actually his new book, is Leaders Eat Last. And I just heard Jan say she went without paycheck so her employees could get paid. So that is clearly that same value, leaders eat last.
And I think it's so good that, Jan, that you talk about that, because I think a lot of people say, well, I'm going to get in my own business. I'm going to become rich. Now, you did do well when you sold the business. I mean, you worked hard, but I think people forget those earliest days where you did eat last. And I remember hearing those stories, and there's some great stories around that. Jan, you mentioned Hugh Ross, and who is the father of Tim Ross, of Ross Mortgage, and there's some great stories. I remember this one story you told me about when you walked into Hugh's office, and he was holding the mouse. Share that story with our listeners. It's so hilarious. But then also get into, beyond that funny part of Hugh, what were the things that really inspired you for your business?
Sure. Well, Huey, because I developed such a good relationship with him, I was one of the few people that could walk into his office unannounced. He allowed me that privilege, which I thought was just pretty incredible for a young girl. And I was, you know, 30 years old in the business, and here's this legend. And so one day I walked in his office, and he had a stand-up desk in his office. And he was standing there with a computer mouse in his hand, and he was pointing it at the computer screen. Now, Hugh, first of all, I have to back up a second. Hugh wasn't known for his really wonderful vocabulary in terms of swearing. So there was a lot going on in that moment. And he said, my son told me that all I had to do was point and click and this thing would work. Now he's standing 6 feet away from the computer screen with the mouse in his hand. I go, honey, it's not a remote. You have to put it down. So I had to show you how to use the mouse. I think for at some point he was forever grateful for me showing him how to use the mouse without being embarrassed in front of his employees. But he was again, I think I already said that he was one of my very first customer that signed a contract. But long before that, even as a young girl in my 20s, going to see him as a mortgage insurance underwriter. And Hugh and I would discuss underwriting, and of course I had to comply with, you know, the mortgage insurance guidelines and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guidelines when I underwrote. Well, Hugh didn't underwrite like that. Hugh would always look at it and go, this is the way he underwrote a file. He would look at the pictures of the house, look at the value, look at the names of the people, if they were married or not, and say, okay. And that was pretty much it. That's how he underwrote a loan file, and we would have lots of discussions about those files. He says, why can't you do this, Jan? And I tell him. So he taught me that I could stand up to someone and not be afraid. And he gave me the respect to banter with me, and he taught me how to just be gritty, to just dig in and do what you had to do to succeed. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He is a wonderful, wonderful man. I shouldn't say was. To me, he was because I haven't seen him in a while, but he's a wonderful pioneer in this business and taught me very, very much. And I'm grateful.
So, Jan, I've heard you mention grit. I've heard you say perseverance. I've heard you say persistence. I've heard you say, you know, like leaders eat last. Pour all those things into a bucket for me. And what is the one characteristic or trait that you believe that a leader needs to have in order to be successful?
Do I have to only pick one, Mark? My top two, integrity and passion. Those are my top two. You have to have integrity. You have to stay true to yourself and have a passion for what you're doing. You have to believe in it. You have to love it. And if you don't, you shouldn't do it. And once somebody, an employee or a coworker senses that you have that, they buy into that. And those are the two that I would pick, I think.
Great two. Passion and integrity. And I think we are seeing a lot of people struggling with passion as the mortgage industry is kind of going through another one of those cycles where, you know, stress can overtake passion at times. And we've watched integrity ebb and flow at different times. And I think that's really interesting. And really, not only interesting, but it's just such an important two characteristics. So I absolutely resonates with me. When you look at the biggest challenges facing the leaders in the industry today, I mean, you've been out of it now for 2.5 years, but you're still very well networked into the industry through your association with Michigan Mortgage Lenders and, of course, our good friend Joanne and the leadership she brings there. But what are you sensing the biggest issues to be that our leaders are facing today?
Well, I think the industry itself is facing another, you know, huge challenge situation. I think, you know, when you know, the ugly lending went out, now they went so strict. And so I can only speak from a risk analysis standpoint, but, you know, it's an ebb and flow with the risk standards. And I think that you have to be able to adjust to that. I think you just have to accept where the industry is going in some regards. But in others, I think you have to, you know, you have to see the world in a different way and in your brain and know that you can change it. That's the way that I think you succeed in our industry. I believe that it's always ebb and flow. It's always changing. It's not constant, as you well know.
You almost have to have the ability to look around the corner to see what's coming.
Correct.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges facing today's leaders in our business?
I don't know that anything today is different than any other day. I think that all of the basics to lead are there. I think that you just need to get around those corners that you think are corners, like you said, Mark, and make your way in the world. If you want to be the best underwriter in the world, if you want to be the head underwriter, if you want to be the best salesperson, if you want to be whatever, just strive for that with those values that we talked about being, you know, front and foremost.
You know, you watched a lot of people, a lot of leaders in our industry succeed and fail. What would you say is the one characteristic that's caused leaders to fail more frequently than other mistakes?
Selfishness. They become very selfish. They think of themselves before they think of someone else. It's no different than the things you learned in kindergarten, right? Be nice, you know, be sweet. It's really no different than that. You have to be considerate of other people. And I think that they become selfish and they forget to think of another human being. They forget to ask the questions that they need to ask. They forget to ask their employees, gee, how could I have done that better? Because they don't want to admit that they're failing as a leader. But a leader's role is to say, how do you think I could have changed that? And you take their input and you say, gee, I think that's valuable input, or I don't think it's valuable. But you ask the question. And I think that people fail as leaders to really connect and lead without selfishness. That's my thought process.
Selfishness and greed's another one in there that I would, you know, but I mean, which, you know, I think greed is fed off of selfishness. So that's a really good point.
do those behaviors then lead ultimately into an overall trait that derails these leaders, or is there something more to it than that in your mind?
Well, no, sure. I think that the greed and the selfishness, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, sometimes you don't take a paycheck, and sometimes you don't. You have to do what you have to do to make other people okay before yourself. And I think if they don't do that, first of all, they'll ruin a company, you know, from a financial standpoint. And secondly, they'll lose all the respect that they've gained with their employees. And again, respect is extremely important in a leadership role, and you have to earn that. You don't just get it because you're the president or the CEO. You have to earn that respect from people. And again, earning it is with all the qualities that I think we've talked about. I'm passionate about the fact that you don't take it for granted just because you have a title. And I think there's too many people that try to do that. They have to keep the human concept in mind and that human behavior in mind. I'll tell you another story, quick story. I used to have boxes of Kleenex that I bought from, you know, the warehouse stores in my office because my door was always open. And so people would come in and they'd tell me their stories and they would cry. Now, I'd be in the middle of a business crisis, but it was okay because it didn't matter. They just come in and cry about something personal going on in their life. All I do is grab the box of Kleenex, put it on my desk. All they needed was an ear and a hug. Within 10 minutes, they were more productive. And I didn't do it because of that. I did it because I cared. But they were more productive just because they had an ear to listen to. And I think leaders forget to do that.
I was going to share one of the concepts that Simon Sinek, who we talked about earlier, talks about a lot is servant leadership. In fact, he's got a great cartoon that he shows about that. And Jan, I'm hearing you say is, you know, a lot of your career was spent being that servant leader, not, you know, that person that gets down in there in the trenches with the troops, helps pull, is the shoulder to cry on. It provides the inspiration and doesn't just boss everybody around. And I applaud you for that. It's amazing that you embody that servant leader that he talks about.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, that's the way I ran the business. I just couldn't think of any other way to do it, quite frankly. And then it was successful for me, so I was pleased. But and the rewards are important.
And it paid off.
It did. Yeah. Well, ultimately, I still miss the fact that I don't, you know, have that connection like I used to. But yeah, I mean, monetarily, it was fine. But it was it's still a divorce situation. You know, I had to give up the baby that I birthed, and that was a difficult thing to do for a little while. And as long as you believe in that, it was a rough go for a little while.
You know what? I've thought about that in my business, and it's like,
sure,
you know, that day is probably going to come. Hopefully, it's 20 years from now. But when it does come, that cannot be easy, Jan. It is like a child that you had as a child, and you grew and it became successful, and now you got to say goodbye. That can't be easy. I admire you for that too.
It's like walking a child down the aisle. You know, you just lost them. You know,
I don't want to think about that.
Yeah,
we got two daughters and two weddings ahead of us. I can't even imagine it. I'll be the guy, the blood.
Oh, you're going to need that box of Kleenex now, David.
Yeah, I just send over that. At whatever you're buying those crates of that, I'll probably be needing it. Yeah, you guys have probably lived that one. Let's talk a little bit. This is really a good point to really talk about you talking to future leaders or someone that's coming into a leadership position for the first time, Jan. What would be your advice to them getting started in leadership?
Well, I think, again, I go back to that book, Grit. Before, it's to me, it's like a Bible for leadership. Angela, I don't even know Angela Duckworth, but that woman's insight to me is pretty incredible. Mark, I think you might agree, right?
Yes. My top producing loan officer sent that to me, and he said, from one gritty guy to another, and I read through this, it's like, oh my gosh, this book really is a how to succeed in business. It really is.
It is. It's like how to succeed as a leader for dummies almost, you know,
if you
pay attention to the words, I think. I really think that people need to start there, and they need to self-analyze. Not everybody's a leader, thank God, because we need people that aren't leaders to you know, do other things, but not everybody's a leader. And I think you need to assess whether or not you think you can do it. And that's put your ego aside. That's put your other people first. You have to be able to do that. You have to say, wait a minute, they come before me because they're doing the work that I've envisioned. And if you can't emotionally separate yourself from that, then you shouldn't be a leader. But if you can, you can be a great one. And you have the passion and the vision to do what you want to do in the best way that you can do it. And again, I think I said this earlier, learn from your failures. You have to be able to say, gee, I really screwed up there. I need to make sure that I can do this better and ask people, how can I do this better? And get their input, yeah. I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that goes to the passion and integrity as you're talking about. And it's authenticity. So it really comes down to authenticity. And that's what you're really talking about, which fits with the things you were talking about up above that are key to leadership that you think is so important. That's really good. Excellent.
I was just going to say, I think, Jan, that a lot of people take failure for ultimate failure, where failure is a natural part of success. If you fail and learn and fail and learn and fail and learn, I mean, my gosh, that's how we all learned how to walk. If we had the same attitude towards failure when we were learning how to walk, none of us, we'd all still be crawling around, because a lot of people see short-term failure as an outcome, not as a learning proposition. So I admire you for bringing that up. That is huge. And I was going to ask, you know, besides that book, Grit, are there any other resources that you'd recommend for an aspiring leader to try and get some insight on becoming a leader?
I think anytime anyone can get a hold of any motivational speaker, I'm not going to name any. Well, we've already talked about the ones that we think are good. But I think that anytime that you are able to better yourself, and even if you glint 2 seconds out of a motivational speech that you hear, it's 2 seconds that you didn't have before in your life. And I think that you just reach out and grab anything that's going to make you better, whether it's a book, whether it's a motivational speaker, whether it's a tape that and ask people. Like you're asking me, are you aware of anyone? And you told us who is important to you. I think anybody just needs to reach out, and don't stop reaching out. Try to continue your education. That's one thing that was hard for me. You know, as you know, Mark and Dave, running businesses, you're busy, you have all these things to do, you have customers that you're dealing with, and you have to stop and remember to continue to better yourself. Make sure you're learning all the things that are current in the industry. Make sure that you're aware of things that are going on. Make sure that you expose yourself to as much as available to you, because there's a lot available. There's a lot if you look for it. And I think that you can't ever stop learning. And
yep.
I never did. I still haven't.
Sharpen the saw. But Stephen Covey, sharpen the saw, right?
You know, we have as we wrap up this interview, I'm also thinking, you've talked about someone coming into this industry, wisdom you should give them, but we have a lot of people like yourself that are retiring. It's one of the biggest things I've failed at. I can't seem to get that done. I'm 67 and refiring instead of retiring, but you really have found retirement. You're really enjoying it, Jan, and a lot of people are really wondering if you're going to be able to do that. So there is a group of people out there that are in the process, they're aging out, they're looking at retirement. What would be your advice to that end of the mortgage professional community, saying, here are the keys to retiring successfully? What would those be?
Oh, that's an interesting question, Dave, because I struggled with that for a good long time. And I decided that I was tired of, you know, decorating a house, and I was tired of, you know, doing the things that on daily routine. And I thought, all right, do something that, again, makes you passionate. And you really have to do a self-analysis. Once again, like you did when you started in the leadership position, you have to analyze yourself and say, what is it that I want? What am I passionate about? For me, I'll give you an example. I grew up around horses. I never owned one. I just herded cattle with my grandfather in Texas when I was all young. And I decided, darn it, I want to live with horses. So I'm volunteering at a therapeutic writing center. Never worked with handicapped children in my life. And I volunteer at a writing center where I help the kids on the horses and help them ride and help them learn. And so I'm around the horses. I'm learning tremendous things from the kids. It's a whole new learning experience. And it's really become a passion of mine. So I think if you're retiring, you got to find something that makes you want to get up in the morning, that energizes you, that makes you happy. It's a really wonderful feeling once you find that again. But it takes a while. You can't expect it to happen overnight. It doesn't. It's a whole process of analysis again. Like, oh boy, I don't have an identity. You know, you go through all that. And once you find it, it'll be good for you. But yeah, and you might try and fail at a few things. I did. And then you find the right thing to do and you're good to go.
You know what? I talked to you getting ready for this interview, and it is fun to hear the excitement back in your voice, because I know you did struggle there early on in retirement. I mean, it was, you, like Mark was saying, walking that baby down the aisle, letting it go, or it that has got to present its challenge. But it's when you found something other than just playing golf and enjoying your time with your husband and your beautiful new home and all that in Florida, a great place, it was when you started doing something for someone else. And Jan, I can hear it in your voice. You're back, and it's so wonderful you're back, but in this new chapter. I just want to tell you, that's inspirational to me. I don't know if I'll pull that off someday. I think I'll retire someday. Who knows?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know that'll happen, but it is great wisdom, and it's wonderful to hear you talk about that. And more importantly, it's just good to hear how happy you are. And I'm just so happy for you, because you've given so much to this industry. And it's an honor to have you join us today. Mark, I'll let you wrap it up with your thoughts and comments.
You know, I'm gonna echo a lot of what you just said. Very inspirational, especially that last part. You know, for those of us who've been in the business for a while, and you know, what does that future hold? When you think about it in those terms, finding something else that you're passionate for, just as passionate as you were, it really makes you look differently about it. So, Jan, you've been such an inspiration to our industry, one of the very first women to run a business, you know, back many, many years ago. I'm not going to tell, I don't see how many, when it was harder, I dare say a pioneer in our industry. And I think you and others like you have broken that glass ceiling to where I see a lot more women in leadership in our industry. And it's a good thing, because having the variety of perspectives from men and women, different ethnicities into our C-suites is only good for our industry. And so thank you for being one of those pioneers who broke through that ceiling.
So good.
Thank you guys for your kind comments, and thank you for having me. And I just want to close with this for me. If anybody that you come in contact with needs to talk about their future, I am available and I'm free.
That's
free
good.
To contact me. I'd be glad to share anything I can with anybody.
For those that do want to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do that, Jan?
I think the best way is email. It's JanWBoggs, BOGGS, @gmail.com. That's my code name.
That's your code name. That's good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Be sure to say hi to your husband. We appreciate you being here with us. And listeners, thank you so much for listening in on another great interview with a true industry professional and pioneer and veteran. We're just honored to have Jan Wetzel here with us. Mark, thanks so much for being a part of this. So good to have you here. I really appreciate it. Great questions, Mark.
Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure to be with you. And Jan, thanks. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. Good to talk to both of you.
Thanks for listening to Licking on Leadership, a weekly podcast about leaders in the mortgage industry. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening.